With us in studio, Dror. Dror is a Palestine Solidarity and BDS activist based in Montreal. As you know, this month marks the one-year anniversary of the passing of the Canadian singer and poet Leonard Cohen. And there's even an exhibition for him at the Museum of Contemporary Art in Montreal. So today we're going to talk about Leonard Cohen, but from a critical perspective, I guess, especially when it comes to the question of Palestine-Israel. And also we will discuss an article that was published on an Israeli online newspaper called Walla, and it's about Leonard Cohen and more specifically his songs and how they were used in Israeli prisons. So it's very interesting revelation, very surprising. So we're going to kind of talk also about what this article mentioned as well about Leonard Cohen's songs. So first of all, thank you, Dror, for talking to us today.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
So I guess, like I said, we're going to talk about Leonard Cohen. So before we talk about his view on Palestine-Israel and the concert that he gave in Israel in 2009 and the article also, as I mentioned, can you first maybe talk to us about Leonard Cohen himself, who he was as an artist, and more specifically, was he the type of artist that was political? Did he have like political opinions, or was he the type of artist who was apolitical?
So I don't think Leonard Cohen was very political. He had very few songs. He sang the partisan songs or World War II song, but he was definitely an intellectual. He was a poet, so his texts are revered as being very, very clever. So he's definitely somebody who thought about what he was writing. So it's not a light pop singer. So it makes sense that you can address him and ask him to take political stance, or at least refrain from collaborating with political oppression. Mm-hmm. So that's at least what we can say.
And what about Palestine-Israel? Now, we know he gave a concert in Israel in Tel Aviv in 2009, and we can talk in detail about that concert, what happened around him, because there was a lot of BDS activism. But before, I guess, this concert, was he known to have given any opinions or stance on the question of Palestine-Israel?
Yeah, that's a little bit typical of artists of his era. In 1973, so after the war in Israel-Palestine, he went there, and he actually even played for the Israeli army. So there's a famous picture where he plays the guitar and sings, and next to him you see military people from the Israeli army. One of them is a young Ariel Sharon, not so young, but I mean younger than before he was prime minister and a butcher of Sabra and Shatila. So, but you can to some extent say that in 1973 you could be naive and think of Israel from a Jewish Canadian perspective as being the homeland of the Jews. I mean, of course, this is a biased perspective, but it could be thought that, you know, nobody told him about the situation before that. Definitely when you come to 2009 and the fact that he never went between 73 and 2009 makes us think that he probably in the meantime read the news and knew about the situation and knew that it wasn't that simple to go play for the Israelis when you had to turn a blind eye to the fate of the Palestinians. So even if he did ignore the situation and went in a naive way in 2009, it didn't last very long, because we immediately, when I say we, it's the BDS Solidarity Movement in Canada and the whole world, there were different ways to approach him, either directly or through his agent or through his record company or through people who knew him. And we know very well that very quickly he knew about the BDS campaign and the demand of the Palestinian for him to refrain to sing there. So there was an active campaign for him not to sing in 2009, but he went anyway.
You mentioned BDS. Can you maybe explain, maybe briefly for our listeners who are still not maybe very familiar with BDS, what is BDS?
Yeah, BDS is a campaign following a call from the Palestinian civil society asking to put pressure on the Israeli government for them to comply with international law. And the way to do it is BDS stands for boycott, divestment, and sanction. So it could be many different ways. So divestment would be divestment from company, but boycott would be boycott of product, institutions, Israeli institutions, Israeli companies, Israeli products, but also Israeli venues for cultural events or Israeli universities for academic events. So typically it would ask artists or singers like Leonard Cohen not to sing in Israel, because when you sing in Israel, you have to use Israeli official Israeli government consulate, Ministry of Culture facilities, and in that way you support the Israeli government. There are ways to play in Israel with only Palestinian people involved. It's difficult, but some artists do it. But in that case, it was definitely not the case.
Mm. So, like we said, in 2009, he decided to play the concert in Tel Aviv. Can you talk to us a bit more in detail about all the activism that happened around it?
Yes. It's a little long. I mean, it's a little long time ago, but I remember quite well because... So, as I said at the beginning, Leonard Cohen is somebody who does think, he doesn't totally ignore politics, even though he will say he's an artist. He immediately thought, okay, I need to present my concert as being something for peace, for human rights. So he contacted Amnesty International and convinced them to co-sponsor the event, so the concert he was giving in Israel would somehow provide money for Amnesty International and would contribute to peacemaking or whatever. So we also contacted Amnesty International through Palestinian people in Palestine who were in touch with Amnesty people over there. And we convinced them that this doesn't work this way and you cannot endorse a concert and make everything go well when there's a campaign to ask for the concert. And it worked. Amnesty pulled off and said, okay, you can do your concert, but we're not part of it.
So initially they wanted, they agreed.
Yes, initially they agreed and then they pulled out and it's official, like they talked about it. So the second thing that Leonard Cohen or Leonard Cohen's team and producers try to do, which is also typical of what singers or artists try to do even today, is he said, okay, I'm going to give a concert in Tel Aviv, but I'm also going to give a concert in Palestine, in for the Palestinians, in Ramallah, for example. And the Palestinian BDS activist immediately said, no, you can't do that. There's no symmetry. It's not because you play for the oppressor. You can't whitewash that by playing for the oppressed. But he contacted Palestinian officials and tried to kind of bribe them in a way. So it's probably not him directly, but his agent or his producer. And he offered to give a free concert. And actually, so one reason I wanted to talk about this article you were mentioning. Mm-hmm. So in an article published 10 days ago in an Israeli newspaper in Hebrew, so it didn't have a lot of echo in the English media, we get a little bit more details about this negotiation about the concert he was supposed to give in Ramallah, and that in the end didn't happen. So the first thing he wanted to do is to invite those Palestinian officials for free, so they wouldn't pay a concert. But it was small bribery, it wasn't enough. So then he said the whole concert will be free, still wasn't enough. Then he said he was going to dedicate the concert to the families of Palestinian political prisoners, which is a big step. It's a little bit more than having just Amnesty International sponsor your concert, because you recognize the oppression and the Palestinian prisoners.
And Israel considers the prisoners, you know, terrorists.
Exactly.
So when he says that, that means he knows there are kind of they're resisting oppression. So
right.
They're not.
And it was for the families of those prisoners who are families are paying the price of the oppression. So, I mean, it's not enough. Again, mm-hmm. There's no symmetry between the two concerts, but at least you could see that he knew what he was doing, and that's when the negotiation. Failed is when some families of Palestinian prisoners told the negotiators and that's what the agent of Leonard Cohen told to the newspaper last week, that they heard that those Palestinian prisoners got tortured in prison, and the torturers from the Israeli security agents were playing Leonard Cohen's music in loops. So mm-hmm. Part of the torture was to play Leonard Cohen songs. So then it was out of the question to have Leonard Cohen entertain people with his music when his music was associated with such bad memories and torture from the oppressor. So the negotiation failed and the concert was cancelled. But this was never revealed in the press, so we don't even know if Leonard Cohen heard about this. We know that the agent, Haggai Stravis, who's testifying in the newspaper, that he knew about it, but he never revealed that since 2009. Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. When I saw the article as well, you were the one who brought my attention to it. The first thing I was thinking, does Leonard Cohen, or did he know that his music was used as a torture, as a tool of oppression?
Yeah, I think it's hard to tell if he knew. I guess, I mean, if I was Leonard Cohen's agent, I would tell him. I mean, why would I keep this very important information from him? We also don't know if this, well, torture probably still happens in Israeli prisons. We don't know if they still play music and whose artists do they play, whether Leonard Cohen or other artists, but it's pretty terrifying news, I think.
So again, that's according to one article in that Israeli newspaper, online newspaper called Walla. And so it's in Hebrew. How did you...
Because I'm on a BDS committee, I'm on a cultural boycott list, which is an email list, which is an interesting list because we get news from Israeli colleagues, from Boycott From Within, so the Israeli boycott group, who tell us about interesting information that are released in Hebrew because we don't read Hebrew. So it could be either they tell us ahead of time when they hear about an artist playing in Israel, so we can start early the campaign to try to convince them not to sing. That's one thing for which it's very useful. It's kind of a watchdog. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they also find these kind of articles which are not translated. This article, actually, the focus was on why do artists boycott Israel? And there was a lot of emphasis on rap artists who boycott Israel, thanks to the Black Lives Matter movement, mm-hmm. who have done a terrific information and awareness raising among artists to tell them about how racist the Israeli society is and how you can't collaborate with that. But at the end of the article, there was this testimony of this Haggai Stravis agent guy who was telling the story of Leonard Cohen's concert.
Mm-hmm. So it's interesting also because it's good to mention that using music and songs for torture is not really specific to Israeli prisons. I know I've heard that before about Guantanamo.
Exactly. There was an Al Jazeera piece that was really interesting about and terrifying as well.
Yeah, about I think it was the Sesame Street music was used to torture.
I remember that.
And there was also We Are the Champion of Queen.
Right, and some hard rock heavy metal music too. Yeah. But it's true that you wouldn't think of Leonard Cohen as music for torture, but I guess.
But if you use Sesame Street like children music. The article was also mentioning that they were saying that, they prefer these tools because when you tell people, the public, it doesn't look horrible when you tell the public that he was tortured by listening to Leonard Cohen. Mm. But then they were explaining that if you hear it from a prisoner's perspective, listening to the same song looping for 30 hours and most of the time blasting, the volume is very high, mm-hmm. and that could last for months, mm-hmm. that could drive prisoners. It's a psychological torture.
Right, and then when you hear it after you released, it brings back the memories and even the feeling, the hurt feeling. Yeah.
What does it say about, I guess, music, songs, arts used as a way to oppress?
It also says a lot about, it's not that... It says that you can't separate music and politics or arts and politics. You can separate it in good ways too. I mean, how can you not talk about politics in your songs, and how can you only talk about birds and trees when you're in a situation where there's so much oppression? But also when Israelis themselves pretend that you should separate music and politics, well, obviously you can't. I mean, even they don't. Actually, we heard this week that Nick Cave, another artist that we were hoping would cancel his concert because he's also he's not the most stupid person on earth, but he decided to go and he gave a press conference that was really insulting to Palestinians. But again, by having this press conference and explaining how he wanted to play because he loved Israel, he proved us right in saying that music is politics. Mm-hmm. You cannot play in Israel and pretend that it doesn't mean anything, that it's not you like it or not, it's a way to support the Israeli government and the Israeli politics.
Mm-hmm. There's also another artist right now. There's a BDS campaign around him, is Brian Adams.
Right.
And
I guess we have a little bit less hope because he's not so famous for making political stand, even though he did send a tweet mm-hmm. during the 2014 Gaza war expressing sadness about the bombing. But I don't know. I mean, maybe the check is...
He even accused Israel of war, of crimes against humanity.
At the time, mm-hmm. yes, he did, yeah. Mm. And he also canceled a concert in Mississippi because of the LGBTQ policies.
So he's okay with... Because some artists would say... What do you answer, for example, for artists who say, you know, boycott is not the answer because art is supposed to unite and art is bring people together and so on. What is the answer to that?
Yeah, I also heard that it was such a tragedy for Israelis to deprive them of Leonard Cohen. I think you can survive without having a Leonard Cohen concert, and you can even listen to him online if really you need a fix. There are ways to do dialogue without playing a concert. And even again, actually this week also, I guess it's a rich week, but there's a French band, a French electronic band, like two DJs. The band is called Acid Arab. Mm. They're not Arabs, but they like to mix Arabic music and electronic music. Mm. And they're two French people, no connection to the Middle East at all. And they were invited to Israel several times, and they gave a couple of concerts. And they went because they thought, oh, we're going to go and we're going to prove with our music that we can unite Jews and Palestinians, and we're going to make peace. And after two concerts, they noticed that it didn't work, that the crowd was purely Zionist leftist, progressive Zionist, but there was no Palestinian at the concert. So now, this year, for the first time, they decided to go only with Palestinian organizing the tour. They played in Haifa in a Palestinian venue, and the promoters were Palestinian, and they had absolutely no money, no government people involved. So you can do it if you want, but it's tough, and of course you're going to make much less mm-hmm. money. So this is something that artists will never admit, but I'm pretty convinced that if they do it, they do it for the money.
Mm. And also to mention, like you mentioned, Brian Adams did use that quote tool, a boycott tool, in another issue. So he obviously doesn't mind boycotting or canceling concert exactly. if he doesn't like That's a specific proof. law. To go back to the 2009 concert of Leonard Cohen in Israel, I just want to mention maybe quotes from the Palestinian Non-Governmental Organization Network that explain, aside from the idea that the concert will contribute in normalizing Israeli occupation and colonization policies, so the general idea why you shouldn't play in Israel and be complicit with the government and so on, everything you explain. They also explain that the Israel Discount Bank was a major sponsor of Cohen's concert in Israel. And this bank is involved in the construction and the continuation of the Israeli settlement project in the occupied Palestinian territories. And as we know, these settlements are illegal under international law. Even the allies of Israel consider them illegal, and Canada and the U.S. and so on. And also they mentioned that the West Bank village of Bel'in, which is a leader in the Palestinian nonviolent resistance movement, they explain in Bel'in that the Israel Discount Bank, the same bank, the trading room of that bank and other computer services are run by an Israeli company called Matrix IT. And Matrix IT's trading room is located in one of the villages' stolen land, so on illegal settlements. So that's another example, aside from the general idea. There's right. all you can't go to Israel and not be in somehow linked to the occupation in one way or another.
I don't know if it's the most important part, but you're right. There's also a lot of financial aspects to the situation. I mean, obviously this type of concert costs a lot, so you need a bank to support mm-hmm. it, and this stolen money. People have to realize, I don't know if it's clear, but Israel is a very small country. So when an artist goes there, he doesn't sell that many CDs or albums. Also, it's far from Europe. And when you do a tour and you go to Israel, you know, usually you go to the neighboring country. But in that case, you can't. You can't, after your concert in Tel Aviv, go to Beirut. So usually you have to go to Europe and back to Europe. So it's a waste of time, and you don't make that much money. So the only reason for artists to go is either political, because because they really support the state, or because they get attracted with an outrageous amount to pay there. To play there. Yeah.
Usually that's why you hear that they actually offer them big amounts of money.
For Leonard Cohen, the amount was released in another Israeli newspaper that I got the translation from the Cultural List. It's a newspaper from 2014, and they said that he got paid $2.7 million to play in Tel Aviv.
So I mean, to play one concert?
One or two, I forgot. Yeah. So I mean, I would be tempted. No, that's not true. I wouldn't. Yeah.
We understand the temptation, but there's more important things. Also, I want to maybe mention a quote at that time from Pagbi, just to bring a Palestinian perspective, I guess, on when these international artists come and play in Israel. Pagbi at that time, to answer to the attempts by Leonard Cohen and his manager to maybe minimize, I guess, the controversy around his concert. Like you mentioned, they offered to do a concert in Ramallah to kind of balance it. So they said that Pagbi has always rejected any attempt to, quote, balance concert or other artistic events in Israel with token events in the occupied Palestinian territories. Such attempts are at, quote, parity, not only immorally equate the oppressor with the oppressed, taking a neutral position on the oppression, thereby siding with the oppressor, they also are an insult to the Palestinian people, as they assume that we are naive enough to accept such token shows of, quote, solidarity that are solely intended to cover up grave acts of collusion in whitewashing Israel's crimes. So that's what Pagbi said. And on Cohen's, about the team of Cohen in particular, they say, the Cohen team's motives may not be so innocent. We believe that the plan for Cohen to perform for Palestinians is an effort to defuse the bad publicity and animated demonstrations by BDS activists at performance venues in several cities. Cohen's managers probably felt that by adding a Ramallah gig at the last minute, they could deflate the growing protest and the Pagbi call for boycott against the tour. So that was Pagbi statement and the Palestinian kind of activist statement on these. We often see these attempts to say, okay, we're going to do a concert for Palestinians. See, we love everyone. Mm-hmm. We're not really biased. But like they say, they equate the oppressor with the oppressed. That's not the issue in Palestine. So I guess the final thing is why it's important to maybe have a critical perspective on these artists' legacies, looking at what they stand on certain issues. Why is that important?
Well, I guess it's also important to see that many artists don't go. I mean, there's a significant list of artists who go and don't go. We can also look at the list of artists who went or didn't go to South Africa during the apartheid era. Some of them are the same, those who breached the boycott at the time and this time. I guess, again, you have people of conscience and people who either side with your oppressor or find the attraction of money more important than their conscience. But I think, luckily, the best artists are on our side, and history is on our side too. And we follow the example of those, Roger Waters or Brian Eno or Ken Loach or Mike Lee.
Do you think now there's more pressure for artists to not go to Israel? Do they feel the pressure on their public image at least?
I'm not sure, because actually what I hear a lot, but it's really hard to report on that, is many artists don't go, but they will never express a boycott. Like when some producer is going to call them and say, do you want to play in Israel? They're going to immediately say no. We don't hear about it. Like Bruce Springsteen, he never canceled a concert to Israel. He never refused officially, but we know he's been contacted many times and he never said yes. So it's kind of a silent boycott. Mm-hmm. And I think that's... for Bruce Springsteen, I want to think that he does it from a conscious perspective, but I mean, a lot of artists maybe just do it because they don't want to get into trouble, so they rather say no. But I don't think it's worse and worse. I think it's better and better. There's always the same artists now go to Israel. A lot of second rank stars that are, you know, they're like Bryan Adams. Come on, his career is totally over here. So the only place he can still bring some people are like, you know, resorts in Texas and Israel. So I mean,
so do you think BDS activists in the last years kind of managed to make it less comfortable for them?
I think so. We have maybe less obvious victories because we have less artists that officially boycott, but there are many, I think there's a lot of silent victories of artists who simply won't go without even needing to cancel anything. Mm-hmm.
So with us in studio, Dror. Dror is a BDS activist and a Palestine Solidarity activist here in Montreal. Thank you for talking to us.
You're welcome.
My name is Sausan Kadura, and you are listening to Under the Olive Tree.